Hello, good evening, and welcome to Studies Through the Bible with Pastor Zach Ebarb. I, of course, am Pastor Zach, and tonight we are answering one of the questions that had been sent in to us over the last couple of weeks. As you guys know, we're starting to take questions from you guys in the comment section, this kind of thing, and we're taking those questions and going about answering all of them and making sure that you understand different aspects of what's going on, but and we do all that for you personally, and then we do it on the flip side and do it on the show, because as I tell everybody on here all the time, if you have that question, the more than likely there is somebody else that has that same question as well. And the one that we have tonight is actually kind of fascinating. I never really considered, I guess, this particular viewpoint or approach to a passage of scripture, but one of the people that listens to this podcast asked a question regarding this idea, essentially, that in some ways in the Bible, it's definitely heavily alluded to that we are not supposed to be violent people. And basically the main driving force of that, idea or that premise, that illusion, is this idea that Jesus says, you know, he who lives by the sword will die by the sword. Meaning that if, and that doesn't necessarily really even mean what we kind of interpret it to mean. We kind of have our own spin on that, this modern day of time of, you know, he who lives by the gun dies by the gun, this kind of thing. And so we're going to kind of try to address that, because Jesus makes this statement of he who lives by the sword dies by the sword. But then in Luke, Jesus talks about, you know, that if a man has not a sword, let him sell his garment and go and buy one. And so one of you guys sent in a question. We're going, okay, so what do we do with this? How is it that if we live by the sword, we die by the sword, but then it also kind of seems like Jesus tells us to go and buy a sword, or, you know, essentially a weapon. Let's just put it that way. And I really thought this was a very unique question. This is one that I put probably a lot more time into it than I needed to put into it, but I just wanted to really check all my bases, because this is a very hotly debated topic, and it touches a lot of other topics, because, you know, this brings about, well, are Christians to practice violence at all? You know, is there a difference between killing and murdering? Is there, you know, and are we supposed to defend ourselves? Are we supposed to rely on God? And so it brings in a whole lot of other aspects to this conversation. And so what we're going to try to do with this question is we're going to look at this idea of if you live by the sword, you die by the sword. And we're going to talk about really what it is that Jesus is saying in this particular verse. And we're going to talk about how the Old Testament and the New Testament view the idea of killing and murdering. Because this even kind of bleeds over into the premise of, well, should we participate in war or should we not participate in war? You know, these particular kinds of things. And so, to start out with, let's look at that particular verse of, you know, if you live by the sword, you die by the sword, which is actually in Matthew chapter 26, if I can get the Bible on my computer to pull up for us. You know, we try to be all fancy in this modern day and time, but I could probably turn the book pages faster than I could do this. So in Matthew chapter 26, I believe it's verse 54. Let me make sure that I'm reading that right. Verse 52, because it culminates into verse 54. So it says, then came they and laid hands on Jesus and took him. And behold, one of them which were with Jesus, we're going all the way back to verse 50, stretched out his hand and drew his sword and struck a servant of the high priest and smote off his ear. Now, we know from the other gospels that this is Peter. Peter draws his sword and he chops the ear off of one of the high priest's soldiers, basically, their guards, that had come to grab up Jesus. It says, "And then said Jesus unto him, Put up again thy sword," and he says Simon Peter in one of the Gospels, "into his place. For all they that take the sword shall perish with the sword. Thinkest thou that I cannot now pray to my Father, and he shall presently give me more than 12 legions of angels? But how then shall the scriptures be fulfilled, that thus it must be?" So we have to take all of these verses in context, because all of these verses are spoken by Christ, the one of, you know, if you don't have a sword, sell your garment, go and buy one, is spoken by Christ before he's taken. Okay, and this particular verse is being spoken as he is being taken. And so we need to think about what's going on here. We're in the Garden of Gethsemane. Jesus has been praying because his hour has come, meaning that the crucifixion has come. Everything that has been culminating up to this point in all of Christ's life, we are at the climax of our story, essentially. Jesus has preached and taught, and now is the time for us to enter into the conflict head on and to resolve the conflict, meaning that we're going to have the death, the burial, and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And so he's praying in the garden. He comes out of the garden, and he already knows what's waiting for him as he's going to leave the garden. And that is, of course, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the guards of the Sanhedrin court, who are there to arrest Jesus Christ. And here, they grab a hold of Jesus, and it's very interesting because there's a lot, the Gospels record so many different parts of this, but the men come, and Jesus says, you know, "Where have you come from? Who are you seeking?" And essentially, if we took all the Gospels and we put them together, Christ says, "Where did you come from, and who is it you're looking for?" And they say, "We're looking for Jesus of Nazareth." And he says, "I am." And the power of the statement knocks the soldiers all back onto the ground flat. Meaning that before this moment happens, where Peter cuts off this guard's ear, Jesus makes it very clear to everyone who is around that he is going willingly. They're not arresting Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is going with them. That's what's being presented here. Is that if he wanted to kill everybody there, he could have killed everybody there. He's God. But even though that display happens, when they step forward to arrest Christ, Peter pulls his sword, which really wasn't much of a sword. It's kind of more like a machete. It's probably be more of a modern day comparison. You know, it's not a 36-inch broadsword. You know, it's not, you know, knights and shining armor, medieval Europe that we're talking about here. And Peter pulls this essentially very long knife out, and he cuts off the ear of this guard. And Jesus immediately scolds him. You know, you knock it off. We're not doing this. He puts the ear back on that guard, by the way. And it's in that moment that Jesus says, "Put up again thy sword into his place. Sheath your blade. For all they that take the sword shall perish with the sword." Now, this does not mean that, you know, as Christians, we're not supposed to touch weapons, or that we're not supposed to be sometimes engaged in violence or any of these kinds of things. The idea of what Jesus is saying to Peter is, if you try to get through life by violence, then you will die violently. This is a very common sense statement. I'll give you a good example. If you grow up and you join a gang, more than likely, how is it you're going to die? Well, you're going to die, more than likely, in some sort of a gang confrontation. If you join a gang and you kill people, you live by violence, right? That's what gangs do. Everything is accomplished either through money or violence. if you try to accomplish things through violence, you kill people. Well, what do we do with murderers? Well, back in the day, it's a little more 50-50 these days. They were issued the death penalty. If you murdered somebody, you were killed. That means if you live by violence, you're more than likely going to meet a violent end. What he is telling Peter is, Peter, you cannot live by violence, because if you live by violence, you will end up dying violently. You will perish in that way. You don't want to, basically, humans are not supposed to act like animals. You know, if my dog doesn't want the other dog to get into the food bowl, he attacks the other dog. He bites the other dog, or he growls at the other dog. He uses violence and force to achieve what he wants to achieve. Well, one day, he might pull that stunt, and the other dog might whip his hind end. So what's happened? Well, he's lived by the sword. He's lived by this power. He's lived by this violence. And he's also been undone in that same manner. And so Jesus says, first and foremost, Peter, if you try to live violently, you will die violently, essentially saying, don't live that way. That way's not going to get you what you want. In this moment, it might seem like if you attack these men and fight them off, you're winning, but actually you're going to be losing. And part of the reason that Peter's going to be losing is not just that we're not supposed to use violence to gain the things that we want, but also because of the particular moment in which Peter is doing this. He says, thinkest thou that I cannot now pray to my Father, and he shall presently give me more than 12 legions of angels? But how then shall the scriptures be fulfilled, that thus it must be? He goes, Peter, I'm going willingly. Do you not think that I couldn't kill all the people standing here if I wanted to? I'm God. But if you continue to try to intercede in this, not only will you die violently at the hands of these guards, but I cannot fulfill the scriptures. There is no other way, Peter, to gain salvation, to gain the things that I have preached to you about, unless you let me go. Jesus' reason for this is more about the fact that Peter is interceding. He's inserting his will over God's into this situation. And Jesus is saying, look, Peter, this is going to happen regardless of you. If you try to do what you're doing, you will die violently. Put your sword away. If I didn't want to go with these men, I wouldn't be going. But this has to happen so that we can fulfill the scriptures. This has to happen so that everything I have told you will come to fruition. So when we're looking at that verse gets taken out of context in a lot of ways. It tends to just get used very flippantly. You know, oh, if you live by the sword, you die by the sword. You know, if somebody throws something at you and they miss and you throw it back at them and you hit them in the head, you're like, oh, you live by the sword, you die by the sword. It's not what that means. It means that if you're trying to go about through life, if you think you can gain the things in life that you want, that a successful plan in life is for you to use violence, your ultimate ending will be in violence. That's what the idea is. This doesn't pertain to war. This doesn't pertain to self-defense. This doesn't pertain to any of that. This is if you try to get your way in life violently, eventually your violence will meet a greater violence and it will be your undoing. It will kill you. Eventually that gang will meet a bigger gang. And that bigger gang will kill them. That's essentially what the idea is that how you live is also how you are undone. You know, all of us, I can imagine that if you were on here and I asked you, how do you want to die? None of you would say, I'd like to be murdered, right? There's nobody that wants to be murdered. That's a violent death. Well, if you only use violence in life, you will have a violent death. That's what Jesus is saying. And he's not even saying that in a guaranteed way. He's saying that in a proverbial way, meaning that if you live that kind of lifestyle, more than likely that's how you're going to die. If I live out here shooting in the streets and attacking people in their homes and using violence to get what I want, more than likely I'll die violently. The odds of me coming out of that life without a bullet in my back is not very likely. So when we're looking at this, already we've kind of got to put this verse to bed, because this isn't about self-defense. This isn't about war. This isn't about killing. It's not about murdering. It's about using violence to get what you want in life. That's what it's about. Which obviously, you know, we could bring murder into that, because if you murder somebody, well, you're only murdering somebody if that's how you think you can get what you want, is to kill this person. You know, my wife is weird. She listens to Datelines all the time. I tell her, I'm like, you know, you got to be careful, because one of these days I might start taking notes. I'm just kidding. But she listens to these all the time, and people are always fascinated by death and crime and all these things, which is kind of weird, because none of us want it to happen to us, but we also like to read about it. And anytime there's a case on there where a husband murders his wife or a wife murders her husband, they always do it because they think they can get what they want by getting rid of this person. And then, of course, they go to jail and they're given the death penalty, or they're killed in prison, or they rot in prison. Those are all violent deaths. That's what Jesus is saying, is that you cannot get what you want in life. You cannot throw your weight around in life. You cannot live a good life if the way that you're trying to live it is through the use of violence. Now, that brings us over to Luke, because this particular verse that was, because these are the two that are being compared explicitly in the question. What's going on in Luke is that, again, at towards the end of the life of Jesus Christ, you know, he's out at the Mount of Olives, and his disciples, you know, follow him out there. Or, well, excuse me, that happens after this. But he's there, and he's teaching his disciples. I'm trying to, let me go back here, make sure that I get the full context correct. Where Jesus is preaching here is that he says they began, and there was also a strife among them, which of them should be accounted for the greatest. So this particular part is happening right before Jesus goes out to the Garden of Gethsemane and Luke. And they're all arguing about who's going to be the greatest and this kind of thing. And Jesus is explaining to them how the kingdom works, and how, you know, the least is the greatest, and those who's the greatest servant will be the greatest in the kingdom. And, you know, there's all these things that are going on. But and this is also in the same passage where Peter is told he's going to deny Christ. You know, because Peter, oh, I'll never deny you, Lord. And he's like, oh, yeah, you're going to. In fact, you're going to three times. So all of that is going on. They're in the upper chamber. They're having this conversation before Christ goes to the Garden of Gethsemane. And what people don't understand is that night, the Last Supper, you know, with the disciples, everything that Christ does that night is he's continuing to tell the men, be prepared, be prepared, be prepared, be prepared. That's what this is all about. Be prepared, be prepared, be prepared. My hour is upon me. I'm going to die. I'm going to be crucified. And as Jesus keeps teaching this lesson, the disciples are doing just horrible things. They're being arrogant. They're being boastful. They're arguing about who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom of God. They're arguing, oh, Lord, I'll never deny you. I'll never fail you. I'll never leave you. As you know, there's all this self-righteousness and all this arrogance that Jesus keeps getting from these men as he's telling them, look, the hour has come. I'm going to die. There's going to be all kinds of terrible things that are going to happen when I die. You need to understand, men, you need to be prepared. And so if Jesus tells Peter, you're going to deny me three times, it says, and he said unto them. So he turns his attention to all of the men. And he says, when I sent you without purse and scrip, this is verse 35 of Luke 22. When I sent you without purse and scrip and shoes, lacked ye anything? And they said, nothing. So Jesus says, when I sent you out before, you know, when they went by twos and this kind of thing. Remember all that passage that Jesus sent them out and they cast out all manners of devils and all that. And they came back and they're like, oh, we did all this amazing stuff. And Jesus was like, yeah, I told you you could. That's what Jesus taught me. He says, when I sent you out, I sent you without purse, so without a wallet, and without scrip, meaning, you know, without any, without destination, without, any kind of written idea, without any bag to hold your stuff in. You know, basically, I sent you out without any money or without any stuff. No maps, no clothes, no anything. And shoes. So without purse, without scrip, and without shoes. Not meaning that they didn't have any shoes at all, but, you know, these days, if I go to the closet, I got like 25, 30 pairs of shoes to pick from, so does my wife. That's pretty much everybody in the United States for the most part. Unless that's just not the kind of person you are. But, you know, you got dress shoes, you got work boots, you got your house shoes, you got sandals, whatever. You have all these options. Back in this day and time, if you had one pair of shoes, you were doing great. Jesus is saying, I sent you out without any money, without any stuff, without an extra pair of shoes, because they walked everywhere. They literally burned rubber on their soles. They everywhere they went, they walked. You and I don't have that problem. You have a pair of shoes might last you 20 years. That back then, you'd be lucky to keep a pair of shoes on your feet for a year. They walked everywhere that they went. It says, I sent you out, no money, no stuff, not even an extra pair of shoes. Did you lack anything? Did you go without anything? And they said, well, nothing, no. Meaning that even as they were going out, they needed shoes. There was somebody that was willing to help out these disciples of Jesus Christ. If they needed food, they needed money, they needed clothes, there was always somebody that wanted to help out the disciples of Jesus Christ. Meaning that when Jesus sent them out, that was during the time where Jesus was popular. Everybody thought he was young and hip and cool, and he was preaching things they'd never heard, and he was wonderful, and he was feeding them every time they went somewhere. And then the moment Jesus said, you follow for just the food and the signs, they all, oh, forget you, dude. If you're not going to put on a magic show, you're not going to feed us, you're not going to give us the stuff that we want, we don't want to listen to you. Does that kind of sound familiar? You kind of notice the modern thriving church? They feed you, they give you stuff, they give you entertainment. Those churches are exploding. You go to a little old country church, they're preaching just the truth of the Word of God. Everybody goes, oh, they're so out of touch. That's what happens, is that Jesus, while everybody is excited and they think Jesus is cool, and there's this time period where Jesus is showing patience and leniency with these people and trying to preach and teach and get them to grow and show them nothing but, you know, the love of Christ, these kinds of things. They loved him. They were completely okay with him. They liked everything that he was doing. And he says, so men, you know, when I sent you out that time, you never lacked anything, did you? He says, then he said unto them, but now, meaning now, men, there is a shift in the tone. Then you didn't go without anything. You went out with literally nothing to your names, and you were perfectly fine the whole time. But now, the tone of the world, men, is going to shift. You are not going to be accepted. You're not going to be liked. You're not going to be loved. Those days are over. That's what Jesus is saying right out the bat. But now, things have changed. He that hath a purse, let him take it. If you got a wallet, you got a savings account, buddy, you better take your money with you. And likewise, his scrip, you better take your bag. You better take your money, You better take your stuff. You better take whatever you need while you're going out about my work. And he that hath no sword, let him sell his garment and buy one. For I say unto you, that this that is written must yet be accomplished in me. And he was reckoned among the transgressors, for the things concerning me have an end. Jesus looks at his men. He goes, if you got money, you better take it. You got a bag, and you got your clothes and all your stuff, you better take it with you. You don't have a sword, you better sell your garment and buy one. Is Jesus telling these men to go out and have fight? No. No. He's saying, you need to start using common sense approaches to life. It's not going to work that way anymore, men. You're not going to go house to house and all your needs are going to be met. You're not going to go place to place and all your needs are going to be met. That's while I was popular. That's while everybody thought we were cool and hip. That was while everybody thought I was going to come in and destroy Rome and be their king. He's telling the men, look, there is going to be an attitude shift towards Christians, towards my followers, towards you. So you better take your money. You better take your bags. You better take what you need to protect yourself. You need to start taking common sense approaches to doing my work. You better start using common sense in how you travel. You know, if I left the house to, if I got up one morning, left my house, didn't take my wallet, didn't take my phone, didn't take my, my car, didn't take my work bag with me, and yeah, I do tend to carry a pistol with me anywhere I go, didn't take my weapon with me, my wife would think that somebody had kidnapped me. Well, why? Because I don't ever leave the house without the things that I might need while I'm not in my house. If I get broke down on the side of the road, I don't have my wallet, I don't have my phone, I can't call somebody to come help me with a car, I can't get somebody to bring me gasoline, I can't pay for food or water or something if I need it, if I get stuck somewhere. That's what Jesus is telling them. He says, look, don't think there's going to be people there to just help you. Don't think for some, in any way, shape, or form, that you're going to be divinely supplied. You're going to have to learn to use common sense, man. You know, there's kind of these Christians today that are starting to pop up in modern Christianity, as I'm starting to refer to it. They kind of have this idea of, you know, I could go stand in the middle of the road, and as long as I pray for the Lord to protect me, a car won't hit me. You try that enough times, see if that works out. You know, you kind of got these people, well, we'll go out into a part of town that's loaded with gangsters, and we'll just take our Jesus t-shirts and our Bible, and everybody will love us and be kind to us. Yeah, you try that and see how long that works out. Now, don't misunderstand me. We go into those kinds of areas where I pastor all the time. I take common sense measures. There, I do have a weapon on me in case somebody threatens one of our members or tries to hurt or kill one of us out there in those very rough areas. I do take my wallet in case I need it. I do take my cell phone in case I need to call 911. That's what Jesus is telling these men. He says, men, don't expect any help from the world. Don't expect to be accepted by the world. Don't expect God to just stick his hand down and magically save you if somebody puts a gun to your head and pulls the trigger. He says, men, you need to understand, I'm going to be leaving you. I am leaving you. All those things that you didn't have to worry about for all these years because you've been with me, that's gone now. That's all over with. I'm going to be crucified. I'm going to ascend. And yes, I am with you, and I'll lead you, and I'll guide you, and I'll love you. You've got to use common sense. You've got to know how you're going to eat. You got to know how you're going to travel. You got to know what you're going to do if somebody tries to kill you. You've got to know, because more than likely, there's not going to be anything there to bail you out. And a lot of people look at that and they go, oh, well, goodness gracious, if God wouldn't just save us from a bullet, I mean, what are we going to do? I mean, God's never worked that way. God's never worked that way. I've been in a car wreck. You know how dumb it would be of me to sit there and go, well, why did God not stop that car wreck from happening? Because there's two people with free will who are sinful, who make bad decisions, and those bad decisions culminate into things like car wrecks. Well, what's God supposed to do? Hit the freeze button on every car wreck across the world? No. That Jesus tells them to have common sense because the world's going to play out the way the world's going to play out. And they need to be prepared, and they need to be getting ready, and they need to be aware of the things that are around them, because the world's attitude towards God's people is going to be to destroy, maim, kill, and discredit. So when you're looking at this verse, is Jesus telling us to use violence against other people? No. No, he's not. That's not the point. Jesus is saying you need to be prepared to start doing the work without me, which means you better take your wallet, you better take your stuff, and you better make sure you got an exit strategy in case somebody tries to kill you. That's what Jesus is saying. And a lot of people kind of like, oh, that's, yeah, Jesus is saying to buy weapons and go fight wars and all this. No, that's not what he's saying. And because look at the next verse. It says, and they said, Lord, behold, here are two swords. So here are the disciples and all their stupidity. Aha, well, don't worry, Jesus. We've already got two swords between the 12 of us. And Jesus and said, he said unto them, it is enough. And people are like, oh, okay, so two swords is enough. That's not what he means. He means we're not talking about that anymore. You're missing the point, men. That's what Jesus is saying. I'm not telling you that, make sure that every one of you strapped to the nines with a gun on this hip and a knife on this hip and a knife back here and a knife in your boot and a secondary gun on your ankle. I'm not saying that, men. You're missing the point. What I'm trying to get you to understand is be prepared. Be prepared for suffering. Be prepared for adversity. Be prepared to have to use some common sense to make it from day to day. If you see somebody down the road that's got a gun in their hand, probably don't go witness to that one. Probably go in your house and call 911. Let the cops sort him out. Okay? Don't go. Don't. Leave your house and think that divinely the Lord's gonna help you get from place to place as you go. Use some common sense. Be prepared. Now, that of course brings in the next question because I've already mentioned twice that this is not the idea of not defending yourself. And not only have I mentioned that twice, but I've mentioned that I do indeed most of the time carry. If I'm going to Walmart, I do not. But if I'm going out into a place that there's the potential for wicked or dangerous people to be about, yeah, I'm not an idiot. I'll take the precautions that are necessary for that. The place that I pastor in, the area that I live in, it's a very rough area. I've had to deal with drug dealers, I've had to deal with drug addicts, I've had to deal with robbers and thieves, I've had to deal with violent people, and I've also had to even deal with mentally insane people in the times that in the years that I have pastored in the area that I'm at. There's a lot of that kind of thing all throughout this community. There's been more than one time that I have found myself with a gun in hand at the church building trying to run somebody off that's down there trying to do something they ought not to be doing in the dead of night. I'm on a first name basis with the police out here. That's the kind of community we live in. I still love the community that we live in. I'm not talking bad about it. I just want you to have the facts with what I'm about to say. There is nothing wrong by the scripture standards with defending yourself. There's nothing wrong or evil with having to take a life in a situation that you have no other choice. There is nothing inherently evil or sinful about the nature of war, where again, You either will take the life of the person pointing the gun at you, or they will take yours. There was a movie that I really liked that came out just a couple of years ago called Hacksaw Ridge. It's about a pacifist in the military during World War II. It's a very powerful movie. Really admire the man's beliefs. Admire how many lives that he saved and all the amazing things that he did. He won the Medal of Honor, as he should have, for his service in Japan at Hacksaw Ridge. But do I think for a single moment that his biblical idea of not touching a weapon or not taking a life has any biblical basis? No, it doesn't. Definitely prize him for his convictions and standing up for his convictions. By far one of my favorite movies of all time, and by far one of the probably should have been celebrated sooner soldiers to serve in our nation's history. But that doesn't change the fact that there's not a biblical basis for his belief. We today kind of have this idea that Christians are supposed to basically be doormats for anyone and everyone, and that's not in the scriptures. It's not there at all. No, you're not supposed to murder somebody. Yeah, murdering is that I hate you, I want to kill you, I have a desire to kill you, and I think I'll gain something in killing you, therefore I will kill you. That is murder. But there's never been a time in my life where I've been in a situation with somebody who was doing a bad or wrong thing that I had to call the police and hold at gunpoint and wait on them to arrive at our church, that I desired to kill the person on the other end of the barrel. What I desired is for them to not do the evil they're doing, to get their life together, and to maybe get a wake-up call as they're getting taken away in the back of a car. That's the goal. I have never, thank God, have never been placed in a position that I've had to pull the trigger on a human life. Never has happened. I've been put in some other awkward positions in my life with other living beings out in the woods hunting and these kinds of things, but never with a human. And I hope that it stays that way, because that's the difference between someone who is a murderer and someone who is willing to do what is necessary. The Bible speaks many, many times in the Old Testament about the fact that there are times and places and situations in which you do not have a choice. You know, if somebody broke into my house tonight with a gun, I could pray to the good Lord above all day long. That doesn't mean that God's going to reach his hand down and the guy's going to go, you know what, actually, y'all just such nice people, I'm going to leave your house and go home. That's not how it works. That's not how the world works. That's not how anything's ever worked. That would be interfering in the free will of that evil man. Now, I could pray that God will have me prepared and ready, that if something like that were to happen, I could intercede and stop that situation. That's a realistic prayer. Of God, you can use me. I will do what is necessary, despite the fact that I do not want to do that. That's what you need to understand about the difference between murdering and killing, is that when you murder something, it's because you think you're going to gain, you want to do it, you hate the person that you're looking at. But with killing, it's because you have no other choice but then to take that particular life. Levitical law talks about it. David's whole life is a picture of it. There are lots of times he could have killed Saul, that he walked away from killing Saul. Why? Because David wasn't a murderer. David wanted Saul to do what was right. He did not ever hate Saul, despite the fact that he had all the reasons in the world to hate Saul and to kill Saul. But because he was never put in the position that he had to kill Saul, he didn't do it. And that's what that difference is. And that's what Jesus is saying to these men here. Be prepared. Don't live by violence. People who live by violence, they are murderers. They are evil and wicked people. But at the same time, men, you need to be ready. Because whether we like it or not, right now, we're in a place in our history, churches are being attacked all the time. I hear about church shootings all the time. When our insurance people come out here for our stuff every year for the church, we have to talk about security teams. We have to talk about what our insurance is there, because, you know, if somebody tries to come in and slaughter and kill 35 people, and you put a bullet in them first, you could go to jail for shooting the guy who came in there to kill people to begin with. There's all just so many horrendous and heinous things that you have to be prepared for. You have to accept that there is a chance this could happen. No, don't go looking for it. Don't go putting yourselves in those situations. Avoid them at all costs. But you better be prepared. And so that's what's going on in these verses. And, you know, I'm sure that this is going to bring about a lot of questions. We live in a very different day and time. People have some interesting ideas. There's probably even some of you that are going to be mad as an old wet hen to hear me saying the things that I'm saying right now. But what I want you to understand is that you can thank whatever you want to thank all day. I hope to God you're never put in that kind of a situation. I hope that you don't ever have to find out whether or not you're prepared for something like that. But I can tell you right now from personal experience, with the way the world's going, you may find yourself in that situation more often than you realize in the day and time that we're coming into, especially if you're a child of God and you're going to church and you are trying to actually get out and witness and minister in areas that are extraordinarily dangerous. In Arkansas, the Forest City, I think, if I might be misquoting this, but we have the second or third highest murder rate in all of the cities in the state of Arkansas. The only one beating us is Little Rock. Well, Little Rock's population is 100 times bigger than ours, meaning that if we're going to do this, we're going to break this down statistically, a homicide to amount of people. Oh, there's a whole lot more murdering out here than there is in a city as large as Little Rock, Arkansas. So you have to understand that if you're working in those kinds of areas and you're actually witnessing, you're actually trying to get out there, you're actually trying to win souls for the kingdom of God, you'd better be prepared to run into some unsavory characters. And so I hope this helps you to kind of differentiate not only these verses, that Jesus really isn't talking about self-defense or murder or war or any of that in these two particular sets of verses that the question was asked about. Rather, he's talking about making sure that you're prepared and not living a life of violence, you know, not seeking out violence and to try to achieve your will through violence. But I hope that it does answer some of those peripheral questions. As always, if this spawns more questions, send them in. We'll look at them. We'll go into the Old Testament. I mean, there's tons and tons and tons of verses that deal with killing versus murdering, self-defense versus war, and all that in the Old and New Testament alike. And we'll talk about all of those if we get any questions that come in about them. Might even look at a few of them next week. You know, I might have that discussion of war versus self-defense just to bring some more clarity to this conversation. I just don't want to deviate from where the actual question came from for tonight. But as always, I hope all of you have a blessed week, a safe week, given the topic that we've discussed tonight. Pray that none of you run into any unsavory characters as you're going about the work of God. And as always, make sure to send your questions.